Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 559, titled The Opus Dei Code, subtitled The Vatican Rag, Part 3. This is being recorded on June 18th of the year 2006. This broadcast is a follow-up on a line of inquiry that I've been engaging in for a good quarter of the century. Long-time listeners to these programs and the AFA and Miscellaneous Archive shows have been aware of the long investigation that I've been engaged in, again, over the course of roughly a quarter of a century, into some of the power politics and specifically sub rosa fascist control over the Vatican. Vatican power politics and the history of fascism, Nazism, and Italian fascism in particular, is a long and tangled relationship, and an understanding of which is essential for a grasp of the contemporary landscape. Now, as has been the case in the examination of other fascist-slash-religious groups, be it the Muslim Brotherhood, or the fascist element in the Zen movement, or the fascist element in the Tibetan Buddhist movement, or the Zionist movement, or whoever, I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing Catholicism as fascist. So with that pro forma caveat, let's plunge right in. What we're going to be looking at in this program concerns, to a large extent, Opus Dei. Opus Dei is a very powerful lay order in the Vatican, but it has achieved special prelature status. It is an organization whose history is inextricably linked with fascism. It was begun in 1928, by the way, coincidentally, if in fact that is, the same year that the Muslim Brotherhood began. They both began in 1928, one in effect bounding the former Soviet Union on one side with Catholic reaction and the other on its southern border with Muslim reaction. Whether or not that's a coincidence, who knows? But in any event, in 1928, Father José María Escriva de Balaguer, a Spanish reactionary, founded Opus Dei, which then went on to play a very important part in the fascist dictatorship of Francisco Franco, other Latin reactionary and fascist regimes, and the Opus Dei order wields a profound influence in the contemporary Vatican. It was very close to the late Pope John Paul II. It is very close to the current Pope Benedict. And as we're going to see, the Opus Dei organization is one that appears to be a significant element of the Vatican-slash-Underground Reich connection. The Opus Dei strongly overlaps the Propaganda Due Lodge, and that milieu, the Propaganda Due Lodge, the Opus Dei, reactionary Catholicism, has in turn, at an operational level, dovetailed with pan-Turkist elements associated with the National Action Party and the Grey Wolves. The Pope shooting and the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring brought that link together, and we're going to ruminate that about that as we go into the program. Let's begin by reviewing an element that we looked at in For the Record program number 508, the Vatican Rag Part 2, Der Panzer Kardinal, of the very close relationship between Pope John Paul II and the current Pope, Pope Benedict. We read this from a UPI International article. The Pole and the German, i.e., John Paul II and Ratzinger, now Benedict, the Pole and the German have been called intellectual bedfellows. For almost 20 years, the two met at least once a week, usually Fridays, for a 90-minute discussion of doctrine and discipline. A working lunch followed, lasting often until late in the afternoon. A theological liberal of sorts in his youth, Ratzinger was later nicknamed the Panzer Kardinal for his iron hand in bringing Marxist parties in Latin America and clerics with mushy views on sexual ethics to heel. Well, elsewhere in For the Record 508, we took a look at the links of both John Paul II and Ratzinger to not only the tangle of fascist intrigue around the Vatican Bank, the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano, the murder of Roberto Calvi, the attempt on the life of the Pope, and a great many other things, including the strategy of tension in Europe, but we specifically took a look at the links between the rise of Pope John Paul II and Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, we took a look at the influence of the traditional fascist slash Vatican networks on the careers of both men. We took a look at some of the ratline-connected Nazis and Vatican co-conspirators, people like Cardinal Frings, people like Cardinal Giovanni Battista Montini, later Pope Paul VI, and others in the rise of both, again, Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI, formerly Cardinal Ratzinger. What we're going to be stressing in this broadcast is the role of the rise of Opus Dei in both men. And in just a minute, we're going to take a look at an Opus Dei professor who appears to be the person who basically runs Pope Benedict XVI. Reviewing information from For the Record 422. Now remember that among the many people who is influenced by Opus Dei concerns Arnold Schwarzenegger. His wife, Maria Shriver, is the daughter of an Opus Dei operative, namely Sergeant Shriver, the former running mate of George McGovern. From the book People of God by the late Penny Lernoux, a very good book about Vatican power politics and Opus Dei. Speaking of Opus Dei, a final category consists of co-operators or sympathizers who can be Catholics or non-Catholics and who usually make financial donations. Sergeant Shriver, George McGovern's running mate in the 1972 presidential election, was a co-operator with Opus Dei. His daughter, Sergeant Shriver, married to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and right-wing Catholics such as Knight of Malta Mayor Richard Reardon, a former L.A. Mayor Richard Reardon, and others have played a key role in the rise of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I would note, too, that Schwarzenegger's father was a key police official in the city of Graz. The Graz Police Department, as we looked at in For the Record 529, was an active collaborator with the Vatican-slash-Nazi rat lines. And Opus Dei has been very close not only to Pope John Paul II, but also to Pope Benedict XVI, formerly Ratzinger. Reviewing again from information presented first in For the Record 422, and again from the book People of God by Penny Lernoux, of the fascist heritage of Opus Dei, again, featured very prominently in the current hit movie The Da Vinci Code, of the fascist heritage and practices of Opus Dei, we read, "But it was not only the inevitable intrigue in Rome that left its mark. Back in Spain, Opus Dei members were making rapid advances in the Franco government under Admiral Luis Carrero Blanco, an Opus Dei sympathizer who, as premier, virtually ran the country. Until Carrero's assassination in 1973, Opus Dei leaders were arguably the strongest conservative political influence in Spain." By the way, in For the Record 556, near the end, we took a look at a Mr. Ruiz, another Opus Dei Franco cabinet member who was a key speaker at a meeting of the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, an international fascist network embracing not only the Hunt family and Nelson Bunker Hunt, but people from the MacArthur staff with German fascists and, as I just mentioned, Opus Dei people as well. More about the relationship between the Vatican and the Opus Dei order and the profound influence on the fortune of Opus Dei, the fortunes of Opus Dei, by John Paul's ascension following the precipitous death of John Paul I, who was making moves in cleaning up the whole P2 nexus. Returning once again to People of God by Penny Lernoux, matters changed radically when John Paul became Pope. Opus Dei had courted the Pope since his days as Archbishop of Krakow. He had been invited to speak at various Opus Dei centers in Europe and at an event in Rome. The speeches were later made into a book, copies of which were sent by Wojtyla to the Vatican Secretariat of State. In 1978, when he was in Rome for the funeral of John Paul I, Wojtyla visited Opus Dei's mansion to pray at the black marble crypt of El Padre, who had died 3 years earlier. Monsignor Portillo, his successor and by some accounts the brains of Opus Dei, was welcomed at the Vatican by the new Pope, who in turn was invited to visit Opus Dei's house and centers. Now speaking of allegations concerning Opus Dei's involvement in the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano and the death of Roberto Calvi, there is currently a murder investigation into the death of Roberto Calvi. We're going to talk more about that later. Again, from People of God by Penny Lernoux. Opus Dei was drawn into that imbroglio, the P2 Lodge scandal, by assertions that it had been negotiating with Roberto Calvi, head of Milan's Ambrosiano Bank, and a key figure in P2, regarding a possible bailout for Ambrosiano that would save the Vatican Bank financial losses and embarrassment arising from its dealings with Calvi. The banker's body, either murdered or a suicide, was later found hanging from Blackfriars Bridge in London. His widow maintained that he had been in touch with Cardinal Palazzini, the Opus Dei sympathizer in charge of Escriba's beatification process, about the rescue operation, presumably to be carried out with the help of Opus Dei members who owned or controlled banks in Spain. The trade-off, according to Vatican observers, was to have been a takeover by Opus Dei members of the Vatican Bank and the Vatican Radio, controlled by the more progressive Jesuits. Letters were found on Calvi from Francesco Pazienza, a Calvi aide with links to Italian and U.S. intelligence, in which Pazienza referred to contacts between Palazzini and Calvi. By the way, Francesco Pazienza, a P2 member, as his name crops up in connection with everything from the shooting of the Pope to the strategy of tension to the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano, his name is also cropping up in connection with the Italian/P2 nexus role in generating the Niger Yellow Cake disinformation in conjunction with the Iraq War. Still more about Opus Dei and the Vatican, the boosting of Opus Dei's fortunes by the current or by the preceding pope. At the start of 1983, Opus seemed poised for a major expansion based on papal favor and its new status as a prelature. Its main base remained in Spain, where it raised the largest contributions and enjoyed the most substantial political and economic influence, but the movement also gained members and influence in Italy. It was strong also in Latin America, particularly in Mexico, Colombia, Peru, and Chile. Opus Dei members and sympathizers supported the CIA-backed coup that overthrew Chilean President Allende, and one of them, Hernán Cubillos, became General Pinochet's foreign minister. Cubillos, who founded Que Pasa, a magazine under Opus Dei influence, was later identified as an important, unquote, CIA agent by the Los Angeles Times. In Chile, Peru, and El Salvador, Opus Dei provides invaluable support to right-wing political groups through its religious courses and schools, and through newspapers, magazines, and television outlets influenced or owned by members. It serves a function for the political right and power holders, unquote, said a student of Opus Dei activities in Latin America. A Spanish priest made a similar observation about the influence of Opus Dei bankers and industrialists in Europe, quote, they want to stop the growth of socialism and pacify the labor movement through religion, unquote. And still more about Opus Dei. We're going to talk now about how the previous pope, John Paul II, basically put into practice what he was preaching, and he beatified successfully, by the way, the founder of Opus Dei, Father Jose Escriba de Balaguer. Note also that the person who was in charge, according to Penny Lerneux, it was alleged that the person in charge of the beatification process, Juan Palazzini, was also somebody who made basically made an overture to the Calvi family concerning bailing out the Banco Ambrosiano. And so more now about how John Paul II actualized the support for Opus Dei by basically turning the founder of the fascist Opus Dei order into a saint. This from Removing the Politics from Sainthood by David Lloyd in Vision Foundation for a New World online publication. Pope John Paul II has created a record number of saints during the 22 years he has reigned as head of the Catholic Church. He has bestowed sainthood on almost 300 respected figures from the Church's long history who displayed heroic virtue, unquote, during their lives. He has beatified about 800 more, putting them on the road to becoming saints, unquote. Often, his choices have been controversial and viewed as political statements. In 1998, his decision to beatify the Croatian Cardinal Alois Stepinac received much criticism from Orthodox Serbs and Jews. Stepinac was Archbishop for Zagreb during World War II and afterwards was accused of collaborating with the Nazis in their massacre of Serbs, Jews, and Gypsies in Croatia. In 1992, he beatified José María Escrivá, the Spanish founder of the ultra-conservative Opus Dei, a movement widely viewed with suspicion as a secret society. And in addition to the support given to Opus Dei by John Paul II, we should also know that his successor, Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, has also had the backing of Opus Dei, and it appears that Opus Dei's influence with the current pope could not be exaggerated. Turning now to the article, Controversial Opus Dei Has Stake in Papal Vote, by Larry Summers and Tracy Wilkinson. This from the LA Times of April 19th of 2005. Several European cardinals are sympathetic to Opus Dei, among them Cardinal Camillo Ruini, the Italian prelate who runs the Diocese of Rome on behalf of the Pope and a contender to succeed John Paul. Ruini last year opened proceedings to declare Opus Dei del Portio a saint. But recently, several Italian newspapers breathlessly reported that the two Opus Dei cardinals were throwing their support behind the candidacy of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, a German-born traditionalist who has served as chief enforcer of church doctrine for two decades, unquote. And still more about Opus Dei and the Pope. Note that the two Opus Dei cardinals were seen as throwing their support to Ratzinger. More about Ratzinger's close friend, predecessor, and mentor. Ratzinger's predecessor, the man to whom Ratzinger was a mentor. Opus Dei flourished during John Paul's pontificate. In 1982, he took the unprecedented step of making Opus Dei a personal prelature of the Church, answerable not to local bishops in the diocese where it operated, but to the Pope alone. In another sign of the group's influence, the Pope placed Opus Dei's founder, the Spanish priest José María Escrivá de Balaguer, on the fast track to sainthood in 1992, leapfrogging over Pope John the 23rd. In 2002, Escrivá was canonized before a group of 300,000 in St. Peter's Square, becoming St. José María a mere 27 years after he died. And still more, by the way, note that Cardinal Ratzinger was the person who basically denied communion to John Kerry during the 2004 campaign because of his stand on abortion. It would appear that the Opus Dei influence with the current pope, formerly Cardinal Ratzinger, has continued. We're going to take a look at an article now from the British Guardian of August 23rd of 2005. This is an article about a young and apparently very statuesquely handsome aide to the pope, a fellow named Gonswein, G-A-U-M-L-A-U-T-N-S-W-E-I-N. And as we're going to see, this guy's not only an Opus Dei professor, but he really pretty much appears to be the gray eminence, or the blonde eminence in this case, behind Cardinal Ratzinger, whose health is not the best. So this is the real power behind the throne, so to speak, in the Vatican. Again, from the British Guardian of Tuesday, August 23rd of 2005, an article by Luke Harding and Barbara McMahon titled, "Thou Shalt Not Drool." George Gonswein is the poster boy of Catholic conservatism. The Italian press compares him to George Clooney and Hugh Grant. His critics describe him as the Black Forest Adonis. But how did he end up as the new pope's right-hand man, and is he the right person for the job? The article reads, "As Benedict XVI trundled through the narrow streets of Cologne last week, many of his admirers found themselves distracted by the extravagantly handsome man sitting in the back of the Pope-mobile. The thousands of adoring young Catholics had come to Germany to get a glimpse of the new pope, visiting his native country on his first trip abroad as pontiff. But they couldn't help noticing the pope's new, and rather dishy, private secretary, Monsignor George Gonswein. As he jumped to the Pope-mobile for the first time, one German magazine remarked, we women held our breath. There, where for the past 27 years the grim and pale Stanislaw Diswitz sat behind the Pope, a tall, blonde, athletic young man had taken his place," unquote. Over the past 4 months, the Italian press has also swooned over the 49-year-old German priest who is known in Italy as Don Giorgio. In the gray and elderly world of the Vatican, it is hardly surprising that Gonswine, a keen tennis player and excellent skier, who even has a pilot's license, has become the center of attention. Last month, the Italian edition of Vanity Fair compared Gonswine to the actor George Clooney, while the magazine Chi opened that he was, quote, as fascinating as Hugh Grant, unquote. The Italian president's wife, Franca, was very taken with him when she first met him. Quote, he's very, very young, and he speaks excellent Italian, she was reported as saying. Another woman living close to the Vatican recently told Germany's ARD TV that Gonswine was, quote, an interesting man with a deep gaze, unquote, adding, shame that he is taboo for us women, unquote. Some Vatican watchers, however, are already muttering about Ganswine's influence over Pope Benedict, the first German to sit on the chair of St. Peter for nearly 500 years. Born on July 30, 1956, Gonswine grew up in Riedern am Wald, a tiny Bavarian village. He was ordained in 1984 and is a doctor of canon law from Munich University. He came to Rome in 1995 and was quickly on the Vatican fast track. Again, note that this guy was became a doctor of canon law in Munich University in 1984. By 1995, he's in Rome. 10 years later, he's the right-hand man, the personal secretary to the Pope. Returning to the text, speaking of Gonswine, he came to Rome in 1995 and was quickly on the Vatican fast track. In 1996, the then Cardinal Ratzinger asked him to join his staff, and he became a professor of canon law at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross, an institution affiliated to the secret Catholic movement Opus Dei. So that's the affiliation of this fellow. Continuing. Those who know him praise his efficiency and analytical ability. Quote, he understands complicated issues within about 10 seconds and can give a clear and immediate answer, one Vatican source said. Gonswine is, though, more than just an impressive theologian. He is, like the man he serves, extremely conservative. I think he is very dangerous, Daniel Deckers, the author of a biography of Germany's leading liberal cardinal Karl Lehmann, said. Quote, he's part of a small but very powerful group within the Catholic Church. He will use his power to push Ratzinger in a certain direction, unquote. Three guesses what that group might be. Deckers recalls traveling to Rome to meet Gonswine. Quote, he's a good guy. He's very eloquent and can be very charming. But he came right up to me and said, oh, you don't like us, unquote. He referred to himself and Ratzinger as us, as if the two of them were an institution, unquote. With Gonswine as private secretary, there seems little hope that Benedict XVI will offer concessions on issues that alienate many from the Catholic Church, the use of condoms, gay relationships, or premarital sex. Quote, you can forget it, one religious affairs writer said bluntly. A trusted confidant of the last pope, who made him a chaplain in 2000, Gonswine has worked as Ratzinger's secretary since 2003, and was one of the few aides allowed to give out press statements on John Paul's condition. In the Vatican, Gonswine and Ratzinger dined together, recently entertaining Princess Gloria von Turnentaxis, the German socialite, according to reports in the Italian press. In Cologne last week, Gonswine was never far away from his boss, handing the 78-year-old Pope his reading glasses or traveling with him on a cruise down the Rhine. He was there, too, when the Pope appeared on a hill beneath a flying saucer-shaped dome for a vast open-air mass. In his address to nearly 1 million pilgrims who had spent the night camped out in a muddy field, the Pope reminded the young Catholics that they had to obey all of the Church's rules, not just the bits they liked. That basically means no sex, doesn't it? German pilgrim Malte Schubert, point 19, pointed out. Gonswine's critics even accuse him of turning the Pope into a fashion victim. This summer, Ratzinger and his secretary went on holiday to the papal residence at Castel Gandolfo near Rome, as well as to the Italian Alps at Valle d'Aosta. While both men were hiking in the hills, the Pope appeared in public wearing a Nike hat, designer Serengeti sunglasses, and a Cartier watch. This is Gonswine's style. It's his handwriting, unquote, one religious affairs writer said. This is something I don't understand, unquote. Dan Swine's power derives partly from his place in the Pope's very small personal staff. Benedict's longtime assistant is Ingrid Stampa, and he has four women, Carmela, Loredana, Emanuela, and Christina, who do domestic duties. They have taken nuns' vows, but do not wear habits. Pope Benedict writes everything in German in very small script, and Ganswein is one of the few who can read his writing. So far, Ganswein does not enjoy the same power as Stanislaus Dieschwitz, who spent 40 years at Pope John Paul II's sides. Some have even dismissed him as the Black Forest Adonis, yet it is Ganswein who decides who gets to see the Pope and who doesn't. He also protects his boss from the mound of papers on Benedict's desk. He is the Pope's gatekeeper. This makes him a very powerful man, Decker said. It is not surprising, then, that the Pope's private secretary is already beginning to inspire dread in liberal Catholic circles. In Germany, the Catholic Church is divided more or less between two figures, the liberal conservative Cardinal Lehmann, the head of the German Archbishops' Conference, and the ultra-conservative Cardinal Joachim Meissner, the Archbishop of Cologne. Both men were with the Pope last week, but it is no secret as to which bishop the Vatican favors. Quote, Ganswein is an opponent of Lehmann, one source in the German Catholic Church said. One of Ratzinger's great weaknesses is that his judgment of people isn't always sufficient. He has a small outreach, unquote. Last week's papal tour of Germany was an undoubted success for the Bavarian Benedict. A far less flamboyant figure than his predecessor, Benedict was often embarrassed by the euphoric crowds. But he is a formidable intellectual, able to deliver his ideas with fluency and rigor in numerous languages. The question remains, though, how long will he last? The Pope has already suffered two strokes, one of which slightly impaired his eyesight, and he has a heart condition. Don Giorgio is said to be very protective of the Pope, particularly about his health, but if there is bad news to transmit, it will be Ganswein, the priest with the film star looks, who will be there to deliver it. And, by the way, I would note in the tangle of events that we're going to be looking at later in the second half of the program, the previous Pope's longtime bodyguard, also the head of the Vatican Bank, the late Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, died, albeit a very old man, but he died right in the middle of a series of interesting events that would have uncovered many past imbroglios vis-a-vis the Vatican. Do take advantage of the Spitfire website and related websites, the search function, the printed descriptions, the audio files, the archive shows available from Spitfire to flesh out your understanding of the tangle of power politics around the Vatican and, in turn, the relationship between power politics in the Vatican and international fascism. This concludes side one of For the Record program, beginning again. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program 559, the Opus Dei Code, subtitled The Vatican Rag, Part 3. This has been recorded on June 18th of 2006. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.